Blog Talk Radio.
Masonry, part of the order that is as old as time itself. It's above all, a poet that holds a faithful mirror of all human nature. Fascinating. So, as we go through we face the turmoils around us. We have pleasure, the joy, the reminder of principles and ethics that keep us grounded and help us arrive at deeper satisfaction knowing that we contribute to, not that we see a simpler or variation, idealized sense of the world. We see it as it is, and we see the human condition as it is, frail and prone to complications. It's easy to understand when you have our heads full of a sense of right and rightness and virtue, and when we step outside the door of the lodge, the turmoil of the world is there to greet us. How we respond to that's the Masonic value. That's the worth of the Masonry. In the meantime, we have certain procedures and structures and wording. We are arcane as old get-all. It's the beauty of it. But we still have that fascination. It's like walking in some ways, it's like walking into the Globe Theater. You know that this is the reconstruction of a time gone by, a 17th century time when the church, ostensibly the church was, and the teachings of the church were suspect because of some of the, core beliefs, but because of the frailty of the humans that were practicing and were the represented the organization. They were frail and they made mistakes and they lost credibility. So of course, you know, you would think, is there anything beyond? If you can't rely on the church, and you can't rely on state, and, in order to survive, my ancient ancestors changed their religion to align with the emperor of the day. It's, I guess, easy today to say to suggest that, sitting in my comfortable armchair, that they were somehow callous or superficial. I guess it would take a serious fool to give up their life for the politics of the day. In the when you had an accommodation, so they made an accommodation. What they were, of course, was different than what they told the authorities. What's in a man's heart is different than what he lets the world know about him. So we can look at each other as if we are a threat and some form of menace, or we can look at each other in terms of the truth. And the truth is, we are all the same. We have doubts, and we have strengths, and we have confidences and conceits. But essentially, underneath the skin, we're all about the same. So today, I think you're going to very much enjoy the blend of the commentary and the poetry and music that we bring to you for this next next period of time. One dream ends, another begins. Of course, masonry, it has that sense of continuity. The poet today is a revisit. It's been a number of years since Masonic Effects had any work by William Blake, and today we're going to be diving into a piece of his work that we haven't had before on the program. It's called The Angel. Some of you may be familiar with it. But before we get along too far, we're going to enjoy the music that complements masonry. This is the music that shouldn't exist, just like an order that shouldn't exist. Whoever thought that we could manage to keep out of the fray, that we could actually find something that had consistency and was reliable beyond what the church and state could do, beyond that spoke directly, recognized directly the connection between faith and that sense of creation, the wonder around us, not as a debate, but as an acknowledgement. Here's the Manhattan Jazz Quartet. I think you're going to like this. Just amazing. Being interrupted in our music. You are left. when you open it to speak, are you smiling? Let wind change your hair for me. Not if you care for me. Manhattan Jazz Quartet with the interruption of an advertisement. So I like that. We have this 306th day of the year. These is 59. That's pretty good. 59 left. It's a day when where I am, we adjust our clocks for. Yeah, within the time zone. I'm in a nation that has six time zones. Around the world, there's more than 24. I think Greenwich, there's two or three there alone. Some are quite short, like 30, 45 minutes. But here we have six. Big place. And still growing. My goodness, not. Only to be imagined what the future will be like here. Not altogether necessarily guaranteed to be a paradise on earth. It will, like other nations, go through, and it is going through a period where it's learning from its history, and carrying that forward and making changes and decisions and redefining itself, much as masonry has done over the centuries. The beauty is, of course, that it's the development, the start of masonry is a little more obscure, just obscure enough to tantalize the imagination. We have some glimmers at times of who was involved and what was going on and what was thought. Some things are authenticated. There's this volume of myth, the conjecture, the speculation, and there's also the work of the antiquarians and historians that are validating and they're rewriting our history books, and it's fascinating. And if you think about something this old, let's say 100 years ago, the historians found a new, were able to verify certain facts about the order. All that was written up in that time would have been sort of shelved. It wouldn't be the kind of textbook we would be giving to students. We would be rewriting our textbooks. But all that material is still out there, was and is. And when people pick it up, they take it looks authentic and it sounds authentic and it has currency and people take it as valid. And so it's understandable that in our researches, we are, in a sense, the cultural archaeologists. We're going through layers and layers of information. Not deliberately set to be obscure. That's the nature of the questions that we ask. After a time, knowing who, the start and the root wasn't as interesting as knowing the ideas. What ideas were being worked with and that led men to sit down and talk? People, in fact, to sit down and talk. Now, remember, for a long time, history was written by men as if the listener, the intelligent listener, the discerning listener was male. And this was not the case. Nature and the natural law teaches us that, that certainly validates that time and time again, but whole cultures came to embrace this notion. And we're unraveling that kind of censorship. Even now, we're unraveling it. But that doesn't mean that every male, every misogynist, every male chauvinistic thought, it stops when we have new information. It certainly doesn't. It's more like the surprise. We can overly personalize it, but can you imagine anything more personal than somebody telling you that you're not a person in terms of your nationhood because of your gender? Well, that was going on in this country up until, 1916 perhaps? Women weren't considered persons before the law. That's this place. It's not that it was repressive. It is that new, lurching forward, making fundamental mistakes. But given that there was no manual to follow on the development of a nation, and that, you know, we were using the history of other cultures as only approximations could, we're learning. We're still apologizing for some of those mistakes, as well as dignified men should, as is proper. Not as an excuse that we don't want to remember. We certainly want and need to remember, but it's the value of the fact that mistakes were made. This parallels our development as an order. Mistakes were made. The temporary, the transitory nature of and the caprice of monarchs, the leadership that seemed to be and wasn't proven to be self-serving and indifferent to the needs of the average person led to revolution. Inevitably, it will lead to a revolution. And inevitably, nations have tried in the past and will try again, especially if they don't pay any attention to history, to build the bigger, higher, thicker wall, figuratively and metaphorically. There's no such thing as a wall thick enough or high enough to stop the migration of people that are in need. No such thing. Oh my. Well, you know, there's certain givens in natural law that aren't coming from my mind, certainly, but that we begin to learn as a brotherhood. Was there something in beyond the frailty and vulnerability of our political representatives, of the awkwardness of our parliament, of our elected officials, and of the translation and interpretations of scripture? Was there something? How did they deal with the ultra right wing? The same as today. It's there, and what has that been proven to be more effective than so these terms that we use, ultra-right wing and liberalism? It's very, very strange, isn't it? Very, very strange, because the meaning behind them seems to float. It's quite fluid. So in a sense, Masonry took that next step. We did walk through the mirror. And the next step, it was to ask the question, is there something more than this? Is there something, are there immutable laws? And so the search began. And we've discovered that this search had been going on for thousands of years. And that it, in order to accumulate, we had to overcome xenophobia, we had to overcome racism, nationalism, we had to overcome those kind of, because those were constraints. And we had to pursue the research wherever it was. We were giving ourselves the authority or responsibility to find the answer wherever it might be. Oh, and some of those answers were painful. The people revealed the truths, the facts, at risk to their lives. To think that when we have a firm grasp on an understanding of what's going on does not mean that other people around us will credit us for having that understanding. The best that we can do is to hunker down and let those, what we know, let that knowledge influence our behavior and aim that behavior, make the target of that behavior acts of conscience, acts of character. Yes, it's very difficult. It's like as clumsy as we are, we still try to teach some of the children and students the work of Shakespeare, and we have to wonder why we would still do that. Why is that at all important to think about a 17th century playwright and poet and actor? Well, he filled in a big gap when the church had been exposed for what it was at the time. This isn't about beating up on faith. No, this is separating that out from the structures. He taught us to laugh at ourselves. He had, and some of the ideas that he had, he died, what was he, 52 when he died? He wasn't that old. But he taught us about human nature in a way that we can still examine things that are difficult in our own lives, but easier when we see it on the stage, as Jakes says in As You Like It, all the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and one man in his time plays many parts. His acts being seven ages. The first of these ages is infancy, when the babe is found mewling and puking in its nurse's arms. And the last is second childishness and mere oblivion, complete senility. His glum epigrams make up a set speech. Shakespeare meant them to sound practiced, like an oratory polished off and hauled out at the appropriate occasion, not spontaneous. All the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. Kind of a cynical undertone to it, isn't there? We're going to get into, we'll come back, when we come back, we'll talk about William Blake. Some of you know Blake's work, and I think you'll like this. This is Cecile McLaurin Salvant.
Oh, what a lovely time it was. didn't know what day it was. You held my hand, warm like the month of May it was, and I say it was great, great to be alive, to be young, to be mad, to be yours alone. Great to see your face, feel your touch, hear your voice, say I'm all yours. I did not know what year it was. Life was no prize. I wanted love and there it was, shining out of your eyes. I'm wise and I know what time it is now.
A bit about William Blake. Some of you are, you know, have read about the some controversy in biographies written about the fellow. He was he was born in 1757, and he lived to the ripe old age of 69. He died in 1827. But interesting fellow. He was a painter and printmaker, and largely during his life didn't really gain much, if any, recognition. But today, he's considered a seminal figure in the history of poetry and the visual arts of the Romantic Age. Interesting, if you're not familiar with that period, you might want to, you know, it's not a salacious kind of reference. It's talking about a freeing of the an acknowledgement that there's a freedom of thought possible, that that was juxtaposed against a period of that where such freedoms were considered liberties and suppressed. He held his own views, in some ways quite idiosyncratic, and there was clearly, for, at least in my mind, philosophical and mystical undercurrents in his work. You can see that in some of his paintings and the ideas. But here, listen to this. This is a simple kind of a verb for me, at least. It's called the angel. And it's talking through the memory of a boy growing into an old man. I dreamt a dream. What can it mean? And that I was a maiden queen guarded by an angel mild. Witless woe was ne'er beguiled. And I wept both day and night, and he wiped my tears away. And I wept both night and day, and hid from him my heart's delight. So he took his wings and fled. And when the morn blushed rosy red, I dried my tears and armed my fears with 10,000 shields and spears. And soon my angel came again. I was armed, he came in vain, for the time of youth was fled, and gray hairs were on my head. Soon my angel came again. I was armed. He came in vain. Nobody's going to help you. You know things. You recognize things. Not fearful, hands in the air, running around shrieking. Seeing things more as they are. In all their vicissitudes. Don't you like that word? All their various vicissitudes. No rescue. You're going to live. And eyes wide open. Understanding and experiencing what's coming ahead. Acknowledging it. For the time of youth was fled in gray hairs. Yeah, well, mine must have fled quite some time ago. But still. This is William Blake, worth a look if you're at all a student. I don't expect that everybody is going to be led by the topics and the references that you hear on Masonic Effects, but you may cross-reference at some point in your future. And if you're wondering, if you're the kind of person that wonders why the value, why William Blake, why William Shakespeare, why are they still around? And I might ask you, why are you so curious about things that have some permanence, some durability? Why aren't you turning on the radio to the next pop refrain? You know, a couple of bars repeated, a bit of a catch and repeated over and over again. Not very much innovation. And rap, the new poetry, spoken poetry, some fascinating stuff. There's a lot of garbage there too, but there's also some, you know, you almost need a curator to take you through it. If you're not able to just listen to hours and hours of days and weeks of popular music, it just sells it in and out. But how come you're a student? How is it that you're a student of things that endure, of sounds that endure, of a culture that endure, of values that endure? How is that? Is that your true nature? Are you embarrassed about the seeming to be corny, that, you know, as you walk down the street, you're comforted by the sense that you have this wonder about you, and that private, that secret in your heart that you're a person that is capable and has performed a good deeds for somebody without them ever knowing? There's a bit of, I don't know, is that a sense of smugness or satisfaction, or could it be just simply the truth? I tend to think that listeners, particularly through this kind of technology, we're connecting with listeners that are revealing their true nature. The listeners in South Korea and Brazil are connected through Masonic effects, and Russia and Canada and France and Britain and Austria and some of the Commonwealth areas, Cameroon, going through some upheavals, but listeners tuning in nevertheless, in Uganda. And then the nations that have been there all the time, that here in the West we've not really understood. China, India, and that wonder and mystery of Russia, you know, just the United States struggling, you know, struggling with an ideology that is what it is. This music, I made a note as I was curating the program, Luz que se concebe canta sombras. I made a note, and I put the word frissons. You know what frissons is? Google it, F-R-I-S-S-O-N-S. Some of us, I experienced it with the same music for decades, and I always wondered why, what it was. Now, then I've discovered that it's a term. So I'm not alone. Maybe you experience that sensation. Well, I put that term next to this material. See what you think. It's only a short little tune.
Cuando tú te hayas sido, me envolverán las sombras.
I know what you're thinking.
Cuando tú te hayas ido, con mi dolor a solas, evocaré mi vida de las azules olas. Cuando tú te hayas ido, me volverán sombra, y en la penumbra de la pequeña luna, cuando una tibia tarde me acaricia de
Yeah.
Charming. Charming music. That's nice. Yeah, that's to be remembered. That is to be remembered. Our commentary today. One dream ends, another begins. Kind of fitting against the background of Shakespeare. What has been happening to us is a combination of events and attitudes. We have offered less than our best effort, sometimes, too often. We have ridden on the coattails of a handful of stars. Decades on, populist-driven interaction has redefined the balances between governance and membership and parked mediocrity outside our thinking. Habit and volume were easy replacements for impactful experiences. Just move them through. Expectations of a fraternal order were shifted, driven by a salving of the post-traumatic stress disorder cohort returning home from the wars, but unable to leave the battlefield terror made tolerable by unquestioned validation of obligations and ritual cleansings. Eventually, the efforts by Grand Lodge to please a broad membership were bound to fail. And they have, in some ways. Expectations that soared during the disorientation of the 20th century. Rapid changes in media, wealth, technology, religion, culture, and politics left many people asking the question, what are the goals of a good life? Wealth? It is concentrated in the control of the fewest number of people in the last 120 years. Elites are no longer trusted, if they ever were. The estates are no longer reliable. We question the courts, we question the media, we question religion. A life of distrust, though, is isolating. How do we trust the urban stranger? We are, as Robert Heinlein knew, strangers in a strange land. While some of us may have found answers within the opportunity of Freemasonry, we know in the secrets of our heart that we have barely scratched the surface. There is so much more. Thank you. Sometimes I'm happy, but Oscar Peterson, not bad, not bad. Thank you, Mr. Peterson. That worked. That's the keeper. That's the keeper. We'll keep you around for a little while longer. I never saw anywhere that the words, "and there shall never be any growth from this point forward." I've never heard that attached to any ritual or any of the history of masonry ever. And there is a reverence for our landmarks. We explore those from the fringe on in here on Masonic Effects, but never is it written. So I tend to think that we are experiencing something that was planted and has had a life and continues to evolve, not a permanence. It's like it's like those trees that the Kiwis found at the bottom of lakes. And pulled to the surface and found that the wood in these deep cold lakes was still healthy in the center of it. And then they keyed those trees to find out what they were. And the interesting part, though, here is that I bring it up because they were found to be 45,000 years old. 45,000 years old. The wood looks a bit like a dark cup of tea. The grain is very, very close and tight. I don't know the size or dimensions of the trees. You know, it's like the redwood cedars that grow that are almost all gone. We've just cut them with mayhem. But the 1,000-year-old trees and all that unique and complex chemistry that was around those trees, and the growth rings are so narrow, but there was so much growth. There were some of those trees are 57 feet around. And there's a permanence to that. The permanence of masonry, even though our growth, we were very broad, we're reaching, our hands here are reaching around the world right now, reaching out and connecting. But the growth continues. And it's not to say, well, we can, this is in a form and it's tightly bound. It's not. It's not. It's not trivial. This isn't a sort of a free for all. This is exploration, inner and outer. And it serves a purpose. That exploration has served a purpose. And it's like the music student picking up a violin. Well, they still are taught the canons. They're still taught the note structure and how to do a complete practice, but it's not a limit on creativity. We're taught those basics. We're taught a language, and we're taught mathematics, not to restrict us. We're taught the rules and formula of calculus, not to restrict us, but to liberate us. Oh, and don't fault the meager teacher. If you've just had meager teachers around, they are what they are. Move on. Today we can push that aside and find the creativity and spark and interest in that excites students to learn. And we are always struggling to pass that on without seeming contrite or silly? How do we pass on this enthusiasm? Well, those are good questions, and it's important that we recognize that questions have always propelled us forward in masonry. I mean, for instance, here, we're going to jump into something called Jacob's Ladder. It's not a symbol that I really, embrace, but anyway, the union of Grand Lodges in England in 1813 caused a good deal of rethinking of Masonic symbolism, none more than in connection with hieroglyphics, quoted in quotes of masonry, as displayed in what we now call tracing boards. This involved the final and complete separation of the symbols of the three degrees into three separate groups, and so into three tracing boards. This is not to say that there had not been symbols especially regarded as the province of a particular Greek degree before this, but there was some confusion in different places as to where they fitted in, as may appear from the development referred to later. There were, however, never any official designs of the tracing boards, although there were at least semi-official descriptions of the symbols which should make them up, and many of these had a history of masonry going back well before that time. The only official design which was published that of the Grand Lodge certificate, which first came into use in 1819, and which is based on the type of tracing board of the first degree, which was being made at or about that time. The famous Pillars certificate has had the center of the unusual tracing board design left out to allow for the wording. This center part of the design usually shows a pedestal with a circle, and on the pedestal stands the volume of the sacred law supporting Jacob's ladder, the top of which reaches to the heavens. This ladder normally consists of three staves or rounds and disappears into the top, at the top into a cloud or a glory of light, with the sun, moon, and the seven stars placed around. Now, Dr. Oliver in Signs and Symbols made comparisons with the mysteries in other parts of the world and expressed some surprise that Masonic symbolism of the ladder was built around three principal staves, whereas in all other parallel instances, he finds the number used to be seven. He says, for example, of his examination of the Indian mysteries, the ladder with seven steps was used in the Indian mysteries to designate the approach of the soul to perfection. The steps were usually denominated gates. The meaning is undoubtedly the same, for it is observable that Jacob, in reference to the lower stave of his ladder, exclaimed that this is the house of God and the gate of heaven. Here we find the notion of ascending to heaven by means of the practice of moral virtue depicted by the Hebrew patriarchs and by a remote idolatrous nation under the idea of a ladder, which we may hence conclude was a Masonic symbol. It is true, of course, that in some other aspects of masonry, a ladder of seven steps may be found. In all early Masonic systems, somewhere there is found some attempt to show positive progress by rising above the ground, and there is some confusion about the use of a ladder and the use of a staircase to illustrate this, as well as to the number and significance of the steps concerned. In the lecture forms current today, the three principal steps of faith, hope, and charity were merely described as principal steps out of many, with no specific number in total given. As numbers became associated with the degrees, the number three was that for the apprentice, while the ladder also became more used as the path upwards connected with that degree. And in the same book, Dr. Oliver summarized the Masonic symbolism of the ladder. Always moving forward, looking, searching, explaining. And we do that even today. It's been a pleasure having you here today. But I'm always expecting to sit back and relax and connect with you. The intrusions, something intruding with the music that I've set up. that's small compared to what we believe in our hearts to be a sincere and authentic expression of the true human nature. Freemasonry. I look forward to being with you again soon. It just seems so brief. I hope you're well and take care of yourselves and brethren and others. And commit acts of random Masonic kindness wherever you might be. Here's something that, in the southern, this is a shout out to our brethren that are moving into, in the southern hemisphere, moving into spring and towards summer. This is Bill Evans. You must believe in spring. And for us up here in the northern climes, keep the faith. Spring is going to be there before you know it. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Thank you. Bye for now, folks.